Breaking news coming in from Bet365, and it's no surprise. Same game parlay from Bet365 just keeps getting better.
Well, it's even easier to make a bet. Choose from the most popular markets, like hits, run line, totals, and home runs. So many to choose from.
Download the app, start building your bet, and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
The Bastards of Boston Baseball Podcast.
Back to Folk. Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champion. Game over, series over, and the Red Sox are world champs again.
Yes, indeed. Here it comes. Another edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
Red Sox lose again, dropping game two against the Angels 4-3 for their 17th one-run loss of the season. That drops the Sox five games under 500, causing their record to sink to a putrid 29-34. I'm Nick the Voice, joined by Terry Cushman Jr. and Jason Kelly, and we are the Bastards of Boston. And if you're watching us live rather than listening, you can see we have some beautiful yellow nameplates because this team is just piss. If you'd like to read the articles that we're writing, you can go to bastardsofbostonbaseball.com for wonderful articles posted just about every day. Gentlemen, where do we start tonight?
Well, what do you blame the loss on? Like, there's a number of, you got a buffet of choices here. Like, where are you guys at?
So personally, I put this one on the players. I put this one on the guys who didn't come through in the lineup when you had bases loaded, nobody out in the third, and you only scraped by one run in a game where you knew you had to fight back because Bayo was struggling and fighting through it. So it's easy to pick on the manager. We've all been picking on the manager. I don't put this one on Cora necessarily. I mean, I didn't love Zach Kelly in extra innings, a guy with an ERA of 7.6. coming in that kind of situation, but the uniform personnel should have gotten the job done before that. So I put this one on the players. Like, they choked again. It's, you know, we can pick on the manager, but the players have to own up to it too.
I was going more for like a moment in the game. So the third inning is where you would put it on?
Yeah, for sure.
Okay.
The third was one that I noted down as well. You know, just having such an incredible team when it comes to getting on base and just falling short of getting them to score. Again, tonight, 1-13 with runners in scoring position. You just can't do it. Thank goodness that Sedan Rafaela in the sixth inning figured, you know, he doesn't even need a guy in runners in scoring position. He's just going to lift that ball over the monster. And again, just like last night, they gave us hope and they robbed it from us. This really felt like it was going to be a win the whole way through. We've seen complete victories. This felt like a very complete loss. I don't think that there's one player to blame it on. It's just a lot of little things done wrong or done poorly, and it adds up and it sinks us.
The one spot that really bothered me was Chapman comes out and pitches the ninth, which I liked because I've been screaming from the mountaintops, stop going to Whitlock for two innings. And then tonight it doesn't happen, which is good. And Whitlock looked very good in that one inning, as he typically does in the first of the two that he pitches. Then Chapman comes out and he's got two outs after his third pitch. And I think he needed four or five more pitches to get through the third batter to get the last out. And I'm thinking, well, you know, you don't have much left in the pen. So bring him out again for the 10th, and maybe he can stifle him, and then you can push one run across. And, you know, but we got Zach Kelly, who promptly misfielded what should have been a fairly routine grounder or comebacker. however you want to label it. And before you knew it, the bases were loaded. No outs. What did you guys think of the decision for the double play instead of coming home? I know Delfino in the war room was a little upset about that.
That's a tough one. I've seen a lot of split, you know, discussion on it. Pretty much, it seems like most people feel like it was the wrong call. There's a pretty large group, though, of people saying that it was the right call to go for the double play. I think it sort of boils down to the situation, and we were kind of in a lose-lose scenario there. Zach Kelly on the mound, not exactly looking sharp. If you only take one out, then you suddenly have to count on him to get two. I really just think, though, you can't give up a run. I did think that the ball should have come home there, and the double play is nice, but then you're counting on us to be clutch with runners in scoring position, and we've seen how that plays out time and time again.
I didn't mind it. I mean, I think you have to be in the mindset of minimizing damage. It's going to be hard to completely eliminate it when you've got the bases juiced like that. And you've got a guy like Zach Kelly on the mound. Like, you know, as you mentioned, like, yeah, now you can ask him to get two more outs. Like, that's a lot. I think in those scenarios, I always take the sure thing. And the sure thing was a double play. We've seen this team try to throw the ball home in those situations, and it hasn't gone well. So I prefer they take the two outs. Yes, you concede the run, but you've got an advantage the next inning with your own ghost runner, and you can still manufacture offense that way. Even if you tie it and extend the extra innings, that's still better than, you know, trying to go home, maybe miss throwing it, or even if you do get that out, who knows what Zach Kelly does after that. He might give up, you know, a gapper, and then you're down three and forget about it. Game's over. So I'm always of the mindset of you take the for sure two outs.
I agree. You know, throwing the ball home has error written all over it, and somehow two runs would probably come across instead of just one. So, and then, you know, next best case scenario, you get out of the inning, just one run, and you know, you end up losing the game. In the inning before, in the ninth, you had Christian Campbell. I don't want to jinx him, but slowly but surely, maybe things are starting to trend upwards with him. He drew a walk against Kenley. Kenley wasn't commanding very well. We wouldn't know anything about that with Kenley. But Campbell gets on. Then you have David Hamilton come in. And when Kenley's on the mound and you've got an aging veteran like Travis d'Arnaud, who has probably an average pop time at best. I know Nesson cited something about him. He's not the best at holding runners. That's the ideal scenario for stealing. Very slow delivery from Kenley. D'Arnaud's probably not going to get you. It was basically an automatic steal. And Kenley did try to pick him off once. I thought that was dumb. I would have just simply, I don't know what you call it, a pitch out, or, you know, when they simply, the ball comes home with the intent to just sling it right back to second. Mm-hmm. That probably would have been smarter on Kenley's part, but he went for the pickoff. He would have had one more shot at it if he wanted to, but Hamilton took the bag. It's almost automatic, like I said, in that situation. He's on second base with no outs in the ninth. Couldn't get it done.
And that was with one of your better hitters at the plate, too, with Duran and, you know, top of the order. He still couldn't get it done. So, it, you know, that was a major choke, big time.
Yeah, sure enough. And then, you know, Devers, of course, with a base open, suddenly Devers is a non-factor. They just walk him. And Willier just sort of continues this bad stretch that he's been on and has a couple ugly at-bats tonight, a couple ugly Ks.
Well, let's look ahead to the bigger picture. Can Cora, if this circus act continues, can Cora and Breslow survive the offseason? I can't see both of them still being here next year, unless there's a dramatic turnaround. And every day I'm struggling with, is it Peter Fatsy or is it or is it Andrew Bailey that need to go? Right. Lately, I'm probably going to put it on Fatsy. It's aggravating to see Bayo scuffle like that, but you did get six innings out of him finally for the first time since maybe the second week of April. But then, you know, as we get higher in the organization, sometimes I'm extremely pessimistic on Cora, and sometimes it's Breslow that I think is the bigger problem. And I think right now, I think I'm more pessimistic on Breslow. You go back to, what was it, Friday? I think it was Saturday. It was in Atlanta, one way or the other. He had an impromptu press conference where he took questions from all the beat writers. They all gathered around him in the dugout. They don't have that type of availability from him. And my biggest takeaway from that was, don't expect any major changes anytime soon. Don't expect me to be aggressive in addressing needs on this roster. The roster is what it is, and they need to play better. Like, that's the worst thing I think Breslow can say right now, because this is a bad roster. Every day, just when the lineup gets posted, just cross out Duran and then cross out Devers, and then what the hell do you have? What the hell is left on that? It's not, it's a last place team is what it looks like without Devers and Duran in there. And, you know, if Campbell slowly trends upwards and continues that trajectory, and Rafaela, I mean, he's been streaky as hell, but seeing him tonight just fired up after that 2-run shot, and he's not a guy that gets very emotional. You don't really see that type of emotion out of him, but you did tonight. You know, if you can supplement these guys, it could be a different team. But right now, as much as I can't stand Cora, I think Breslow's the bigger problem. And I can't see stuff not leaking out of this front office as we get into July and August and in September.
It's tricky because I think I agree with you. It's more on Breslow because, you know, we looked at the Crochet trade. We looked at the Bregman signing and we sort of went, wow, cleaned up that offseason. All right, A+. Like everyone, even like national beat writers are giving them an A+ for the offseason. And we were kind of the only ones sitting there going, do you have a backup first baseman in case Casas, you know, tears a rib again or gets hurt again? Like, you know, because he is injury prone. They didn't. You know, do you have like the whole debacle with Devers? That's on Breslow. It's because Breslow wasn't honest with him from the get-go about what the plan was. And he had to fall back on Cora to clean up that mess, which, you know, probably pissed Cora off, but at least he's able to do it. I mean, I look at Breslow's offseason, I go, yeah, you've had a couple of big hits. Crochet was great. You know, Bregman, awesome. It sucks that he got hurt, but at least you ponied up and finally signed somebody. Even Carlos Narvaez. Give him a ton of credit for that. You spotted someone in someone else's organization that they weren't using, and you plucked him. Great. Good job. Even Chapman. I hated the Chapman signing at the time. I was, like, beside myself. But he's been the best closer in, you know, almost in the American League. I mean, he's been that good. So Breslow, to me, did have a good offseason, but there were so many holes on the roster going into it. He didn't fill enough of it. He didn't get the depth that he needed, because when you want to go to the playoffs and you want to go on a run, you need depth. It's not just getting the top guys. Yes, you got a top pitcher. Yes, you've got a top left-handed power hitter. You don't have anything below that. We were talked last night about the rotation after Crochet. Kind of stinks. You know, Walker Buehler, they gave him a boatload of money. And, well, not a boatload, but, you know, a decent amount for 1 year. He hasn't lived up to it. They, you know, they didn't really fill in the back end of the rotation that much. I mean, they're counting on another reclamation project in Giolito. We'll see how he does tomorrow. Like, I just don't think it was good enough. The problem is, are you really going to fire another president of baseball operations? Because, look, we believe that getting rid of High and Bloom was the right move. But the rest of the league looks at it like you did him dirty. And now you bring in Craig Breslow after, what, 13 other people turned you down for the job, and you're going to fire him after 1 year? No one is going to want to take that job if you do that. So it's tough. Like, if heads have to roll and it's Breslow, okay, I don't hate it. I think you could do better as a president of baseball operations, but man, it's going to be tough to get anyone to want to take that position, because it's basically just, if you don't win right away, you're out. Like, that's, the optics of that are real tough.
Yeah, you're absolutely right about that. You know, as much as I loved this past offseason was great for Breslau. There are a few things that I just haven't been able to forgive him for. Totally whiffing on the Sale trade, for example. That was a disaster. And honestly, as much as I love having Garrett Crochet in the rotation, it was really just a desperate recovery after completely whiffing on Max Fried. So as good as the group of guys that we came in here was, you're absolutely right about the depth, because this is a game where injuries happen, and injuries happen a lot. Guys are playing harder than ever. They're just pushing their bodies to the limits. And because of that, you're really only as good as your backup sometimes. Toro and Gonzalez, they've been fine, you know, and they've had their hot stretches so far this season. But I look at a guy like Abraham Toro, and I don't see a guy all that different than Franchy Cordero, a guy who's capable of hitting a couple home runs and going on a hot stretch, but doesn't necessarily have the toolkit to sustainably contribute. And tonight, you know, I am going to harp on about some of Cora's decisions. What this game really said about Alex Cora is that he prefers Romy Gonzalez, Abraham Toro, and Trevor Story versus lefties over Marcelo Meyer. And then later in the game, rather than pinch hit for Romy Gonzalez, who was having a terrible night at the plate, he pretty much said he prefers Romy Gonzalez over Meyer versus righties too. I don't understand what we're doing with these young guys. You have Campbell out there floundering, and he is taking some steps forward, but, you know, moving him around as much as we have around the diamond, making him learn all these positions, it's been a lot of stress to put on the rookie. Moving Carlos Narvaez so high up in the order and pretty much continuing to hope that he keeps hitting doubles, he keeps barreling the ball, he keeps improving. He's a rookie. I just don't know what we're doing. This really is like screaming to me, like, we need a clean slate across the board, because, you know, Fatsy has had his moments where this season we say, okay, maybe the Fatsy method works out. It's sort of been a very hot, cold type of game with him. But with Bailey, Bayo tonight looked better than he has in several starts. And even tonight wasn't perfect. 7 hits, 2 walks, 3 runs in 6 innings. It's all right. He didn't really start striking guys out until pretty much the end of his day. And he got himself out of a bad situation. I think it was in the 5th inning. The bullpen has been nails, fortunately. Weissert's great. Chapman's great. You have certain players who are great with, you know, like you said, Rafaela, Devers, Duran really heating up and hitting so well at home. But I just don't know. The more we sink, the more I think this is just a rotting product, you know? And sometimes you just need to strip the foundation and start over.
So there's a lot of ways to go here. I mean, the Meyer thing was particularly upsetting. I love his poise, and I was saying nice things about Campbell, like, oh my God, this guy's amazing. What a breath of fresh air. And then the league figured him out in a week and a half, and we haven't seen him since, you know, flashes. And like I said, I've all episode long, I've expressed a little bit of cautious optimism, but with Meyer, I just feel like, you know, I don't know. He just looks very comfortable, and he doesn't overthink it at the plate. He just puts it in play. He hasn't hit a home run yet. And, you know, I'm fine with that. I'm fine with that. Just hit extra bases and all that. But getting back to Breslau real quick, and let me just say, if I had it my way, I would nuke it, the whole thing, you know, and I don't mean any statistic. Maybe that might sound like a crazy word to use in a you know, just for a sports take, but I'd get rid of everyone. And when I look at Breslau real quick, yeah, it was nice. Some splashes got made this winter, but if you look at the the Bregman thing, that was forced on him. Alex Cora and Sam Kennedy had a metaphorical gun to his head and said, "You're getting Bregman. You're getting our boy." You know, and that's what happened. And then I'm not going to give him a ton of credit for Crochet because he had the Fort Knox of farm systems to make one move just like that. And I think we're all fine with Teal being in it. That Montgomery kid that we took in the first round kind of intrigued me a little. You know, I was kind of bummed that he was a part of it, but it allowed us to keep Meyer and Anthony and Campbell. So it was what it was, but that trade, that wasn't like this brilliant out of nowhere trade. You knew it was going to be something, and that's what it was. So take Bregman away, take Crochet away. Then where are we at now? I wanted the Buehler signing, and thank goodness. Well, I shouldn't say thank goodness necessarily because it hasn't been that great, but it could get better. And, you know, I was happy we got him. And then, you know, you kind of got lucky with Narvaez. He was never supposed to be an everyday guy. I mean, Connor Wong was the guy. Narvaez stole it. And but beyond that, I mean, what kind of an offseason did Breslow really have? And the thing that, you know, I've been dwelling on in the last couple of weeks is he just doesn't make adjustments. He doesn't make moves in season. And it doesn't even have to be externally. It could be internally as we're seeing it this year. But go back to the trade deadline last year. We're contending. He acquires four players. Here they are. James Paxton, Luis Garcia, Lucas Sims, and Danny Jansen. Those were his solutions. Those were his reinforcements to get us into the month of October.
Not that was just one, embarrassing. That was one of the most embarrassing deadlines I've seen in a long, long time.
Not one of them worked out. He whiffed on all four of them. And the Paxton one was extremely offensive to me. He was literally DFA'd. I know. And then we got him.
And then I know. And it's a shame, too, because I remember being a fierce proponent of, like, Yusei Kikuchi. Like, I wanted to go out. I wanted to get him so bad. And I know some people speculated that there was a little bit of an overpay there. But then, on the other hand, I was like, oh, well, if they're overpaying for starting pitchers, maybe we should flip Pivetta now. You know what I mean? Like, it just seems like it's just been complacency, like you said, for so many years. And it's not even just Breslau. That was the issue with Bloom, too. I just want someone with more killer instinct. I want someone with more edge, and I want them in the front office, and I want them on the field. You know, last night after the show, we talked amongst ourselves specifically regarding the Alex Cora post-game presser. And, you know, I lamented the fact that, you know, typically we actually are parallel streaming live while Alex Cora is doing the post-game. But tonight we do have a few quotes. And from what I've heard, Alex Cora was more frustrated tonight, which thankfully, I remember actually last night to you guys saying that was one thing I wanted more of. I wanted more fire from him. I didn't want to hear, oh, we're so close. Oh, we're really on the verge of something. And the couple of quotes I have here is, we keep making the same mistakes. We're not getting better. At one point has to be on me, I guess, right? I'm the manager. So, you know, I got to keep pushing them to be better. They're not getting better. They're not. We keep making them the same mistakes. I'll be very honest about it, very open about it. You get frustrated. And he also said, we get frustrated, but at some point you ask yourself, what are you going to do? And I can empathize with that. You know, I feel like me and Cora are on the exact same wavelength because I too have been asking myself, what are we going to do? I don't know. It's looking really ugly out there. It's looking sloppy. I've seen a ton of people in the chat tonight, a variety of accounts who are expressing their frustration, you know, really angry at Cora for a wide variety of things. And I think the anger is warranted. We are getting to a point of crisis with the Red Sox where we've been tolerating this product for 4 years. And this year we were supposed to be the AL East champions. That was the projection. I even heard Yankees fans saying it. I heard Yankees fans complimenting us, saying, man, the Red Sox are really going to be dangerous this year. And it just feels like we are just letting everyone down right now. It's pitiful. we need to tighten up the product. But at this point, I am worried with the record, you know, five games under 500. Is there a chance of us coming back from this? Because I'm not even sure a big trade fixes us.
And, you know, the whole point about the big trade, maybe something like that would help. But I don't think Breslow has the stomach for it. I think after he made the Crochet trade, he kind of like took a deep breath and was like, okay, I hope I don't have to make another trade like that anytime soon, because he didn't want to give up those prospects. He values the prospects just as much as Chaim Bloom did. So he probably sat back after that one. You know what? Okay, I got their ace. You know, we have a couple other moves we can make. They should be happy. Now we can just keep our farm system and, you know, we can call up Anthony and Meyer and all those guys whenever we want, right? Well, then the reality of injuries happens. So, you know, Tristan Casas goes down and there's no backup plan at first base. It's Romy Gonzalez until then he gets hurt. And I think part of the frustration that from Cora's end is he's probably looking at a play like tonight that should have frustrated the hell out of him. I know it did me. Why didn't Christian Campbell score on Jaren Duran's wall ball double? What the hell is he doing on third base? You can't read that off the wall. Like, that is rookie crap. And that, look, like, he is a rookie, so you're going to have to deal with that. But the fact that they're putting so much on a kid like that, that's what happens. Like, he should have scored on that play. He didn't. And when you lose this many one-run games, 17 of them now, mistakes like that pile up. So that's what Cora's frustrated about. Like, I think he looks at it and goes, the roster's not that great, but also these kids are learning on the fly. Like, Christian Campbell got rushed. He's probably not fully ready. But because you didn't have a plan at second base, we had to put him on the opening day roster because he had a, you know, he had a good year last year. He had a good first week of spring. He sucked the rest of spring. Like, I don't know what he did to deserve getting the second base job, but they had to give it to him because they didn't have anyone else. So it's rookie stuff like that that I'm sure Cora's looking at, and that reflects in his comments tonight where he's sitting there going, yeah, I guess you can blame me, but I would have told Campbell, go home. Like, it's going off the wall. Go home. Like, what am I supposed to do? So it's, I get Cora's frustration a lot because this team still plays very young. And not all of them are that young, by the way. Trevor Story's 32, all right? So, you know, Campbell, Meyer, sure, they're rookies. But the rest of the team, most of you guys have been in the league for a couple of years now. Start acting like it. Start playing like it. And that's probably where Cora's going, what else can I teach them? What, how, like, am I supposed to teach David Hamilton when to properly tag up? He should know by now. Basically, all he does is run anyway, so he should know that. So I get Cora's frustration, and a lot of that does reflect on just Breslow not doing enough and forcing these kids up way too early.
See, if you're Breslow, you don't have any friends right now. Devers hates you. Cora probably hates you. You're not helping. You're not calling up Anthony. You're not, nothing's getting done. That's why I just won't rule out that one of them won't be gone by the end of the year. Like, we've got four more months of this, roughly. I mean, June has just started, so I'm saying four more months. And I think if I'm John Henry, or Kennedy, I don't know which one would do it. I mean, arguably Henry has been more active on a couple of fronts, but I just see if there's anybody out there. Like, if Dave Dombrowski doesn't get fired by the Tigers in 2015, good chance Sherrington keeps his job for at least one more year. But Dombrowski became available. So you don't want to advertise that you're looking for your guy, but, you know, if some whispers happen and someone's available. The one guy I keep going back to, and I think he would say yes, is Zach Scott. I mean, he was in that front office for 10 or 12 years. And for like 2 weeks, he was the Mets GM until he had a DUI. And then they put a creepy guy in there. He had it for 2 weeks. That winter was the craziest I've ever seen for a front office. But you know, they finally got the Brewers guy. But yeah, so I don't know. I don't know how they survive it. And with Cora, with those comments that Nick read off, I mean, you know, just I didn't hear him. I didn't hear the interview. I'm only seeing the text, but it sounds like there's a little bit of vulnerability there. Like he's like, oh, I guess it's on me. I mean, we just took over the number one spot in MLB in terms of errors. The Red Sox are number one, like we always are. Like it's a hallmark of the Alex Cora era, you know. Bad defense, bad platoons, lefties that can't hit lefties, as I pointed out yesterday. And so I don't know, but one last question here before we get to the matchups. If leadership was stronger and perhaps a little bit more stern, would we be closer to 500 in those one run games? Because that's a big difference. If you only lost half of the one run games, I think leadership has factored into that. And I'm wondering if maybe that's part of the source of Cora kind of confessing that, yeah, it is on me.
Yeah, I think it has to be. I mean, you look at all of those splits when it comes to different games. You look at night games, day games, home, away. When it comes to one-run losses and one-run wins, typically you expect to be about 50-50. That's reasonable. It's a game that could have gone either way. Same thing with extras. You expect to be about 50-50. And if you go a little bit below that, you can say, ah, we just got unlucky. If you go a little bit above that, you go, ooh, we got a little lucky. Very nice things broke for us. When you are this deep in the pit, I think you can't even talk about luck anymore. It's so beyond that. It just comes down to fundamentals, poor execution. It is a freakish, freakish stat that makes no sense. The only answer is we're maybe getting lucky to even be getting those games that close.
Yeah, I think it does. It does go on Cora and some of his decision-making. I mean, Terry, you brought it up tonight. Like, did you have to take Chapman out after he threw only 8 pitches and put Zach Kelly in, who you just called up, who's been horrendous this season? In, you know, look, is it a must-win game? No, but we talked about it last night. You've got the Yankees coming up. You've got a stretch where it's Yankees, Rays, Yankees after this. Like, the Angels stink. You need to take at least one of these games, if not two, if you can manage it. And you go out there and lose the second one because you go to probably your last reliever in the bullpen because you're so terrified of making Chapman throw double digits in pitches when, you know, who knows? He could have gone out there and thrown like 7 pitches and gotten out of it. And, you know, you'd still be tied with a chance to win going to the 10th. So a lot of it is on Cora and some of his decision-making, and a lot of it is on just the finer details of just, as Nick mentioned, fundamentals. And that's where the young roster, the inexperience of the roster comes in. And again, not all of them are inexperienced. Like Abreu, I'm sorry, he's been in the league a couple of years. He's 26. Like, he shouldn't be struggling this much. Someone like Campbell and Meyer, sure, you kind of get it, right? But even a guy like Campbell, you know, you made it through all 3 systems in the minors. You can't learn how to read a double off the wall? I mean, come on. Like, that is just lack of attention to detail. So I do think a lot of that goes on the entire coaching staff, but obviously Cora's the head of it, so he has to own it.
Who do we have tomorrow? Lucas Giolito and
Jose Soriano.
Yeah, Jose Soriano. Oh,
yeah, you guys were worried about that one last night.
You know, I've looked more into the numbers right now, and I've become a little less worried, actually. It looks like a winnable game for us. The ERA is very good, but he's not a guy that gets a lot of strikeouts. And this year especially, he's been very generous with walks. His big thing is ground ball percentage. He doesn't like to let you hit the ball in the air, doesn't like to give up the home run. But so far this year, his K percentage is 16th percentile. His walk percentage is 17th percentile. If we can sharpen up and show some discipline, maybe we can go out and prevent a sweep. Because if we get swept and go into that 9-game stretch that Jason said, I mean, that really feels like a death blow. That feels like the Yankees and the Rays are waiting to just play whack-a-mole with us. And every time we pop up, knock us down and make sure we have no chance at a wild card this year.
It's actually, I think, 12 games because we play them both twice in the next four series. So that could be the season. You lose tomorrow and you go into that 6 games under. That's like, and there's no urgency from this team or front office. So it's crazy. But I don't know. Giolito, his last time out at Fenway, I think pitched pretty well, didn't he?
I think so, yeah. Yeah, he's sort of been like a flip of the coin this season. You never really know what you're going to get.
Well, on the road, he's been phenomenal. I don't think he's been shelled one time. It's been at Fenway, but I think he was pretty solid his last time out. So at Fenway. So we'll see. I was at his game. That was the Friday. No, was it?
Oh, yeah. May 24th, hosting Baltimore. He went 7 innings that day. Gave up 6 hits, 2 walks, no runs.
Gotcha. Yeah, no, I was thinking back to the Atlanta game. Yeah, he must have been, yeah, because we were at the Buehler game and they got shelled. And yeah, so, all right. Well, different crew tomorrow. Actually, Nick, you'll be back tomorrow with Jim and Chris. Chris is like, he's really down in the dumps in the war room. And I'm like, I want to be like, dude, 3 of us have been here since year 1 of Heim Bloom.
So, I know.
Yeah, so anyway, it'll be all right. But yeah, so good
show, thank guys. Thank you guys for joining us. Thank you guys for, you know, sticking with it. Like I said, it's not easy when the season's going like this. But, you know, we've been the Bastards of Boston. Remember, Bastards of Boston. baseball.com for wonderful written articles. And you know, just to respond real quick to Brad Sandler, somehow, yes, I can believe Crochet has no wins at home. Hopefully over the next couple of days we see a little turn for the better, but if not, you know where to find us. Have a good night.
Going to the gym can be discouraging, especially if you're putting in the work but barely seeing changes. But with Tonal, you can actually see your progress with every workout. Tonal provides the convenience of a full gym and the expertise of a personal trainer anytime at home with one sleek system. Designed to reduce your mental load, Tonal is the ultimate strength training system, helping you focus less on workout planning and more on getting results. No more second-guessing your technique. Tonal gives you real-time coaching cues to dial in your form and help you lift safely and effectively. After a quick assessment, Tonal sets the optimal weight for every move and adjusts in 1-pound increments as you get stronger, so you're always challenged. Tonal lets you choose from a variety of expert-led workouts, from strength to arrow hit to yoga and mobility to keep you coming back for more. For a limited time, go to Tonal.com to get $500 off your Tonal purchase, plus a free 4-year warranty. That's Tonal.com for $500 off, plus a free 4-year warranty. Tonal.com.